Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Coming up today on Voices of Montana with Kyle Riley filling in for Tom Schultz, Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm LLC will join us to discuss the final comments submitted Friday by the Montana National Resource Coalition of Counties regarding the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service efforts to revise the Grizzly 40 rule and maintain a threatened status of the bear. Then Senator Steve Daines will join us in the final segment to discuss a number of important issues he's working on for Montanans. Joining us here on Voices of Montana is Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm. He is joining us to discuss those final comments that were submitted on Friday by the Montana Natural Resource Coalition of Counties. And Nathan, thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, Kyle. Thanks for having me. Always good to come on the show.
So the comment period, which I understand was extended by the current administration, but it closed on Friday, and the Montana Natural Resource Coalition of Counties got their comments in about the forthcoming proposed changes, and actually, to my understanding, is to keep the grizzly bear on the endangered species list for a while.
Yeah. So, yeah, essentially, I mean, for many out there, they're probably aware of the fact the grizzly bear issues and over time have been a battle on the state level with primarily Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho, where there's present populations. So at the tail end of the Biden administration, there was a rulemaking to revise the 4D rule for the grizzly bear and maintain a threatened status of the animal, which includes a massive distinct population segment spanning the entire state of Washington and a large portion of Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana, reaching almost to the Dakota borders for Montana. So that was initiated early January by the former administration, and then the Trump administration extended comments, which was helpful with the busy time of year, beginning of the year. And so we took advantage of that extension, and with the past work we've done on grizzly bears and those issues, and developed a really good work product to put into the record and really provide and push a pathway for delisting rather than maintaining a threatened status of the bear.
And I know there are six recovery zones that have been identified, but this zone, the DPS, as you mentioned, covers a much greater landmass. And do you know why they decided to just make it as large as they did as opposed to what the six recovery areas are?
Yeah, well, there's Montana and Wyoming were petitioning for a distinct population segment of the Greater Yellowstone and the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem in their delisting petitions, and then to delist the bear in those regions. And then U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service obviously proceeded with this massive DPS, which is really unprecedented. There's distinct population segments that have been applied for various critters under the ESA, but this one is, the scope and scale of it is very significant. I don't know if the reasoning was to reach as far as you can and scale back and still get something substantive or what, but right. Nonetheless, the concern is for Montana in particular, the distinct population segment zone reaches, as I said earlier, almost to the Dakota border. So it goes east out of the original recovery zones into large regions of short grass prairies and otherwise lands that are currently utilized primarily by livestock grazing on BLM grazing allotments. So that's a concern in that regard. But as for the specific reasons for the size of the DPS, they just wanted to encompass all the existing recovery zones and then provide basically massive buffer connectivity zones between them through this DPS for potential for the bear to be able to disperse and be. Okay. So
we're talking with Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm. He is He and his family raise registered feeder calves in Montana. He's the sole manager of Landmark Resource Firm. They specialize in federal and local government administrative procedures, land and natural resource policymaking, and advocating for private property rights. And I know Tom's had you on the show before, and we do appreciate you joining us again this morning, Nathan. But this recent decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service comes in part from a settlement on a case that came about a few years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there was a settlement agreement. This kind of is a culmination of multiple things. You have the delisting petitions of the states and some other moving parts, and there's been efforts in Washington state to bring in experimental populations of grizzlies into the North Cascades. But yeah, bottom line is, in a case, Save the Yellowstone Grizzly versus U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, there was a settlement agreement that the court issued that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agreed to. And the interesting thing is that settlement agreement provided two pathways, and that was either revise the ESA listing of grizzly bears in the lower 48 United States or remove the ESA listing of grizzly bears in the lower 48 United States. So there was and is a delisting alternative that is a pathway within that settlement agreement. But Fish and Wildlife Service failed to be transparent with the regulated public and the Federal Register notice in their executive summary, because they state that we are doing this 4D revision and this big distinct population segment to satisfy the settlement agreement, but do not mention the potential alternative pathway of a delisting scenario. So that's one thing we really leverage in the comments that were submitted, is you guys didn't even clearly and explicitly disclose that alternative, and that needs to be looked at because that's a viable pathway. It's a pathway the court established that can be considered. And for many people on the ground and local constituents, that's the pathway that is optimal and most cost effective in our opinion.
Yeah. Now, this assertion in the comments that were made last Friday is that the state management should occur because these states, Montana, Washington, Idaho, Wyoming, they've been tracking this population for years. They have the numbers. They have the plans in place to be able to manage that. And the keeping it on the ESA as an endangered species prevents the states from being able to effectively manage the lands that they oversee, correct?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, that's what I've said to people, is dispersion of the grizzly bear east through Montana isn't the issue, though that is an issue. The issue is the dispersion of that critter with a threatened status under the ESA, because that significantly limits and preempts local and state police powers to resolve directly and promptly conflict issues and other things. So, and like you said, Montana, the state of Montana finalized a statewide grizzly management plan in 2024 that anticipates removal from the list of endangered and threatened species. So the state of Montana also has cooperative agreements with Idaho and Wyoming for the greater Yellowstone population. And another thing to note here, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they admit that there is no biological discreteness of the grizzly bear from the northern populations. In other words, the Canadian, Yukon, and Alaska grizzly bears are the same critter as the grizzly bear here in the states.
Okay.
But then they go on and argue discreteness based on the international border, the Canadian border, and essentially assume that, well, the states aren't going to adequately protect and manage habitat and protect the bear, so we need to maintain a threatened status and federal oversight.
Okay. Well, in doing that, there is definitely some cost considerations to consider, that if they do keep the endangered status of the grizzly, would affect those of us here in Montana, correct?
Yeah, and just for clarity, it is a threatened status. They're not listing it as endangered, but as a threatened status. But yeah, I mean, with the bear dispersing, like I said earlier, through cattle country, you have large Taylor Grazing Act districts, you have BLM allotments and grazing lands, and for a federally protected apex predator in the vicinity of those allotments, all those go through 10-year lease and permit renewals, and having a ESA-protected grizzly bear within the vicinity of those allotments will introduce or inject U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service into those permit and lease renewals, with which has associated costs, and it layers a wildlife-specific agency into those BLM grazing permit processes, which is a significant concern for central and eastern Montana.
Absolutely. And then, you know, for the smaller counties that you had mentioned yesterday as we were chatting off the air about this, but for the smaller counties where you have populations of less than 50,000, there are current considerations under the Regulatory Flexibility Act that it appears the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is not taking that in consideration by trying to keep this threatened status. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's one of the core arguments we make also in the comments that were submitted is in relationship to a recent case out of the Northern District Court in Texas. Kansas Natural Resource Coalition, a coalition of counties in Kansas, litigated on the lesser prairie chicken threatened status and distinct population segment in Kansas. Pacific Legal Foundation represented them in that case, and they prevailed in court. The Northern District Court vacated the 4D rule for the lesser prairie chicken, citing the fact that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did not consider costs under the Regulatory Flexibility Act, which is significant because U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service historically has had broad discretion to interpret its own statutory authorities, and they have always avoided any cost analysis with the application of a 4D rule. Well, that just changed last month with that ruling that applied the Chevron deference or the death of the Chevron deference and did not defer to the agency and explicitly vacated the rule and said you have to consider costs. And for the grizzly bear 4D rule up here covering all these states, we applied that to that context because under the Regulatory Flexibility Act, a small jurisdiction is a county with under 50,000 population. Okay. And under the Regulatory Flexibility Act, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service needs to do initial analysis and certifications, which would imply direct consultation and coordination with all those jurisdictions, which has not happened. There is no cost analysis provided in the Federal Register. So that's also another thing we point out is if you do proceed with this massive DPS and this 4D rule, you're going to have to consult with all these jurisdictions and assess the costs under the Regulatory Flexibility Act.
Okay. Very detailed information was provided in the comments that were submitted by the Montana Natural Resource Coalition of Counties. And I know you're not representing them today, but you've worked with them in the past in regards to this issue, correct?
Yeah, I did. I helped out with substantive comments on the statewide grizzly management plan. That was on the state side. Okay. And then I've done work for some farm bureaus and cattlemen's associations in Washington state on the efforts to reintroduce grizzly bears into Washington as well. So yeah, have 5 or 6 years of experience on looking into grizzly issues and the procedural issues involved. So with this go around, it was nice because it's kind of a culmination of all the issues we've engaged on. And we were able to put forward a work product that doesn't just address Montana, Idaho, or Wyoming, but our effort was to address the big picture that would be a benefit for all those states, which is a delisting of the bear altogether in the lower 48.
The fastest hour in live radio here in the state of Montana. Voices of Montana. Kyle O'Reilly filling in for Tom Schultz. Coming up tomorrow, we have Taylor Brown in studio. And Taylor will be chatting with outgoing Montana State President Wadid Cruzado to reflect on her 15-year tenure with the university. We are speaking with Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm talking about the proposed changes for the 4D rule and the threatened status of the grizzly bear. And Nathan, before the break, we were talking about the NCE introduction. That is the North Cascades ecosystem. And that is a part of this DPS area that they've identified, but it really shouldn't include the population of grizzlies in that NCE, should it?
No. Well, the fact is there really isn't a population in the North Cascades. There's some bears that kind of have been there intermittently from British Columbia. And there's been efforts and a final rule from the Biden administration to introduce a 10J experimental population, a non-essential experimental population into the North Cascades. And we make that point in the work product is that because that is one of the six original recovery zones is the North Cascades. But when they pushed the 10J rule for the NCE in Washington, under the Endangered Species Act, before you issue a 10J experimental population, the secretary has to determine whether or not it's essential or not essential for the recovery and conservation of the animal. And they determined in the efforts for the 10J over there that it is not essential for the recovery of the species. And I would just note that the Endangered Species Act defines threatened species. The term threatened species means any species which is likely to become endangered species within the foreseeable future throughout all or a significant portion of its range. Okay. So this whole effort breaks with the basic definition of the act of a threatened animal. The only reason they're claiming threatened status is this international boundary between Canada and the U.S. But there's over 60,000 or estimates of over 60,000 grizzly bears, Canada, Yukon, and Alaska, that covers over 60% or roughly 60% of the range and historical range of the animal. So U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they always talk about the numbers in Montana, you know, 1,200 or 1,000 in the Northern Continental Divide, 800, 900 and so in Greater Yellowstone. But they seem to tuck the broader numbers deeper into their documents of the actual condition of the animal throughout its range. So we make the case that recovery for the Bitterroot ecosystem and the North Cascades ecosystem, there is no need to establish viable populations there to justify delisting in the lower 48 states based on the fact that the bear is functionally recovered in a couple zones and obviously is stable and increasing population through a majority of its range.
Yeah, they almost act like the grizzlies from Canada. They just won't cross the border because they don't have their passport, and so we shouldn't count them in the species numbers.
Huh? Yeah.
Talk with Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm about the proposed changes for the distinct population segment that covers all of Washington and significant portions of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And the revised 4D rule that would keep the grizzly bear under the threatened status. But talking alone about what population numbers were used initially to identify that they needed to be on the threatened status and what the populations are now, it far exceeds what those additional population numbers were put out there, correct? As far as what kept them on the threatened status?
Well, for the recovery zones, for the Greater Yellowstone and the Northern Continental Divide, they have both broke the thresholds of the target numbers. Some of the other recovery zones aren't there. But that's where some people are pushing for delisting and a DPS within just Greater Yellowstone and Northern Continental Divide. But the problem with that is the court settlement agreement doesn't give that as an option. The option is either revise the 4D rule or delist in the lower 48 states. And it's only the delisting pathway that solves the issue across every state. And like we've discussed, Montana and Idaho, Wyoming are well positioned to manage and the bear and its habitat, et cetera. So, and this leads to the one other issue that needs to be followed up is the 1996 U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service policy, because the border issue is coming out of policy, okay, where they are able to create discreteness based on the international border, because they acknowledge the bears cross and there's no biological discrete nature of the bear from the northern populations, but they argue discreteness based on the border itself and differences of control and regulatory mechanisms. So in my opinion, and we assert that in the cover letter, that 96 policy needs to be revisited and probably rescinded, because even if they delist the grizzly bear, this same issue can persist with the Canadian lynx, the Wolverine. You got the Jaguar down south that has a range clear into South America, and they have critical habitat in Arizona and New Mexico for the Jaguar, sure, based on this same 96 policy that looks at that international boundary and allows U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, irregardless of how stable and well the population is through its global range, they're layering regulatory frameworks over private, state, and federal lands based on this 1996 DPS policy.
Okay. So that is something that they haven't even looked at, but really needs to be addressed in order to take a holistic approach on this issue. Talking with Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm, talking about the proposed rule changes to maintain the threatened status of the grizzly bear, as opposed to delisting it and giving management over to the states. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Park Service, as Nathan mentioned last year, they have a comprehensive plan to control the population within the confines of our great state. Nathan, I've heard an argument, or I've read an argument, that some say that if they get delisted, this will open up trophy hunts and it'll affect the population because they'll just be hunted because they're no longer on the threatened status. Is there any credence to that argument?
Well, there are provisions within the state plan and some Idaho provisions that, you know, there's a buffer time, I think it's 5 years, that there would then be potential opportunity for hunting, but that would only be for animals that are outside the recovery zone that are dispersing into otherwise regions that are not suitable for them. But that would all be done in the same way the state manages all the other wildlife. States have the traditional police powers for wildlife management within their jurisdictional borders, and states already manage for viable populations of various animals, from deer to elk and other animals. So yes, there could be potential for hunting in the future, but that will all be under the context of the original recovery zone population thresholds. And so to answer your question, it's not going to be a free-for-all and just totally obliterate the bear off the land. Opportunity for hunting does not mean that at all. It would be part of a mitigation tool that's available when these bears are dispersing far outside the recovery zones and are not in suitable habitat.
Nathan, we've got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with this morning?
Yeah, I think we're pretty confident in the work that's out there and substantive comments in the record, and we just hope that Secretary of Interior and this administration takes a hard look at those arguments and hopefully takes that pathway, which will, I think, disproportionately benefit people on the ground in the long run.
Nathan, thank you very much for your work on this effort and for your time. Nathan Deshmaker from Landmark Resource Firm, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Kyle O'Reilly filling in for Tom Schultz, and we are pleased to be joined by Senator Steve Daines. Senator, good morning.
Kyle, good to join you.
I thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you've been working on a number of things lately for Montanans, and the beginning of the program, we had Nathan Deshmaker on to talk about the proposed rule change on the threatened status for the grizzly bear, and you, and along with other congressional members, submitted a letter last week about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Well, real important issue for so many Montanans, including myself. In fact, I was spring bear hunting Saturday night, this past Saturday in southwest Montana, and I saw a sow, grizzly sow, and two cubs in close proximity. I ended up getting a nice black bear, but I saw three times more grizzlies than I saw black bears. My own little walk around the woods here for about 4 or 5 hours Saturday night. But look, the science is clear. It is past time to get the grizzly delisted. You look at the raw numbers in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. The target minimum was 500 bears. In other words, when they were endangered, they agreed to what the minimum number needs to be. And once you get over that, they are declared recovered. Well, the current number is twice that. It's 1,030 bears, okay, in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, twice the recovery target. You look at the Northern Continental Divide, which, of course, the Rocky Mountain front there in the just to the west of Great Falls, You've got 800 bears is the target minimum. Current best science tells us there's nearly 1,200, which is about 50% higher than the recovery target. So I sent a letter with Senator Sheehy, Congressman Zinke, Congressman Down, and we all signed it, as well as delegations from Wyoming and Idaho, urging Fish Wildlife Services to delist the bear and return the management of grizzly bears back to the state of Montana where it belongs.
That's great, and we appreciate your support on that. We want to cover a couple of other topics here this morning. We're joined by Senator Steve Daines here on Voices of Montana. Senator, you introduced a bill that supports Job Corps wildland fire training. Can you share a little more about that?
Yeah, well, this is called the Civilian Conservation Center Enhancement Act of 2025. And what it does supports the Job Corps Civilian Conservation Centers. They are a really important part of training the pipeline of the workforce needed for some of these important jobs, and one of these is wildland firefighters. As the listeners know, we face devastating wildfire seasons year after year. That's not going away. We're tired of breathing in smoke, and, of course, one of the solutions to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires is forest management and forest thinning, just common sense, reducing fuel loads. But we also have to make sure we've got wildland firefighters. So what this bill does is allows more students to have access to these top-notch training and the resources they need to enter the workforce as this next generation of wildland firefighters.
And that's very much a bipartisan effort that you introduced, because obviously wildland fires don't just affect Montana.
They don't just affect Montana. You're right about that. This is a situation where we get Democrat senators from states like California, Oregon, Washington. You know, as senators in the West, we face catastrophic wildfires in a way that most other states don't see. And as you know, fires do not respect state boundaries or political boundaries. And so that's why we get bipartisan support.
Neither grizzlies nor fires respect those boundaries for some reason.
They don't, but unfortunately, the Democrats don't like delisting the grizzly bears. So that is where we do get into a political fight on that one.
Well, let's go on to the federal level here. You had a bill on no tax on tips that just passed the other night in the Senate. It passed unanimously.
It did. So this is one of President Trump's promises he made. And that's one of his thrusts, is promises made, promises kept. And so I introduced that bill after President Trump announced his promise he made back in the campaign last year. It was based on a conversation he had with a waitress in Las Vegas who talked about how hard she was working, cash tips, and how the government takes a chunk of her for hard work. So this is incentive to get more people back to work, frankly, by taxing them less on cash tips. It passed the Senate Tuesday night, and actually it passed the House last night, or actually the wee hours of this morning. So we've got a pretty good shot here to get this on the president's desk. But we've had some examples. I know many of you are listening about the famous Rockin' R Bar in downtown Bozeman.
Indeed.
We reached out to one of the servers there who agreed that that'd be a nice, really a tax break for hardworking middle-class Montanans.
We are joined by Senator Steve Daines as he is taking a few minutes out of his busy schedule to join us here on Voices of Montana this morning. And Senator, I do appreciate your time for that. One of the things that you also have targeted here is to reverse some of the Biden-era initiative on unfairly targeting Main Street businesses.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, both in terms of regulations and taxes, you realize that Main Street businesses will face a $4.5 trillion, that's the T, tax increase if Republicans don't act in Congress in the next several months. These are Trump tax cuts that are set to expire at the end of this year, and we can't get a single Democrat to join us to stop this massive tax increase. It's $4.5 trillion over a 10-year period. That have a really significant impact, certainly in Montana's a couple thousand bucks a year impact on Montana families, many Montana families. So the good news is we're working hard here. President Trump is pushing hard to get these tax rates made permanent and avoid this tax cliff ever again. We're also working, by the way, to provide some relief on estate taxes, which I know the death tax is a big issue for a lot of farmers and ranchers back in Montana.
Absolutely.
So they can pass on their farms and ranches to the next generation. And we're looking to raise that exemption to $30 million for a couple, which I'll tell you, with some of these land prices in Montana and some of these farm and ranches that have been passed on for generations, they can get to that kind of price faster than you think with what's going on with real estate in Montana. So this is a much-needed tax relief that's coming. The U.S. House passed it this morning, and the Senate will be working hard on trying to get this done in June.
Okay. Now, I know the process is trying to go through to create permanency in the tax code with the One Big Beautiful Bill. Is that in correlation with this effort, or is that a separate?
Yeah. Same thing. It's all that's the big, beautiful bill the president's talking about.
Okay.
So that's included in it. Yep.
Senator, we've got a few more minutes before we wrap up the show. And again, we appreciate your time speaking with Senator Steve Daines. And I just wanted to open it up to you and see if there's anything in particular that you wanted to let Montanans know what you're working on at the moment.
Well, I'll tell you, it's that time of year when we round the corner on Memorial Day. It's viewed by many as the kind of the kickoff to the summer season. School's about wrapping up for many Montana kids, and summer vacation starts. But it's also a somber weekend when we honor those who have paid the ultimate price for serving our country. So Memorial Day is always a day that I think it's important that Montanans remember that we might be enjoying time with our families, with grilling some burgers or steaks or hot dogs. We also remember why we have Memorial Day. My dad enlisted in the Marine Corps in Billings back in the late 50s and served in the Marine Corps. In fact, he was served in reserves there when he was in Missoula going to school, and served with Bob Houck Sr., Coach Houck's dad.
Okay.
And my dad were serving the Marine Corps together. But I was taught the importance of Memorial Day, and I just want to remind our veterans and our listeners that this is a day that we should honor and respect those who pay the ultimate price. So we'll be participating in some Memorial Day festivities back home in Montana Monday. And it looks like the weather forecast is looking good, so it should be a beautiful weekend, and look forward to being back home.
Absolutely. One final question for you. You're in your second term as U.S. Senator. You served 2 years in the House of Representatives. What do you think is the biggest change that you've seen in your now 13 years, going on 13 years in Congress?
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you how important leadership matters. I take a look at what was happening during the Biden administration. Terrible policies on energy, you know, trying to shut down coal strip, shutting down fossil fuel, which is base load power, literally trying to stop the combustion engine. We are working on a bill right now as we speak that would reverse a Biden-era regulation that will ban combustion engines in the next several years. I mean, this is a threat to our economy and our way of life. It's probably not getting a lot of press. It should be, because we're stopping something that could have been a real detriment to our nation and to our state. But I'll tell you, under President Trump's leadership now, back on a full-throated support of all sources of energy, including coal, oil, natural gas, and renewables, but not trying to say one's better than the other. We need all the energy we can get, and we need low-cost, affordable, reliable energy. So I tell you, elections matter. And I'll say this, too. It's great having Tim Sheehy back here. He's been a great addition to the United States Senate. Tim and I are voting along the same lines we go down, and Tim's been a great new battle buddy. So I want to thank the people of Montana for sending back here a great U.S. Senator.
Senator Steve Daines joining us here this morning on Voices of Montana. Senator, we do greatly appreciate your time, and thanks for taking out a few minutes of your busy schedule. We hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Thanks, Kyle. Take care.
All right. Senator Steve Daines joining us. That'll wrap things up here on this Thursday edition of Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.